From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's called the Internet Disinhibition Effect, where people say things they'd never dare say in person. It's got a positive side. A naturally shy individual might enjoy opening themselves up to others, safely shielded by the anonymity of communicating online. But there's a negative side, too. Chat rooms can be inundated by so-called trolls who inject foul or violent language into the conversation. People complain, emails have become nastier, even slanderous, and to judge from recent headlines anyway, cyberspace seems to bristle with crude comments, cutting insults, sexual advances, and threats. There's been much written lately about how the faceless nature of online communications makes it easy to throw off societal norms of what's acceptable and instead let it all hang out. It's gotten to the point where some bloggers have shut down their sites or put limits on who can participate. And there's even discussion now about whether cyberspace needs a voluntary coding system, kind of like the movie ratings of G, PG, and so forth. Under this framework, some sites might bill themselves as more open free-for-alls, while others would let it be known up front that certain types of language will be deleted. Today on The Exchange, we examine how the internet has changed the way we communicate and whether it's been a net plus or minus. What do you think? Have you noticed an increase in rudeness in emails, chat rooms, or blogs that you read? Or are we magnifying this issue off of just a few bad apples? Join us with your thoughts, comments, personal experiences. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send us a short email to the address exchange@nhpr.org. With us from Boston is David Weinberger. He's a fellow from the Berkman Center for the Internet and Society at Harvard University. And David Weinberger, good morning. Welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Mark Timney, Assistant Professor of Journalism at Keene State College, with an emphasis on mass communications and popular culture. And Mark Timney, welcome back to you. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
Well, and I'll start with you, David, and then Mark. There's definitely a perception out there that the internet allows us a platform for saying rude things that we would never say face-to-face. David, to you first, how much do you go along with that?
It's very hard to know. It's easy to think that there must be a lot of rudeness because when you run across it, it's so shocking. We generally don't run across that sort of rudeness. But even if there were good studies, and I personally don't know of any, it would still be very, very hard to evaluate, in part because the internet is more of everything. And so it's more of everything. So you could look at the internet, look at the numbers, and claim with justification that it's pornographic. There's pornography all over the place, which is true. There's more porn, but there's also more romance. I mean, there's more of everything. So certainly there is more visible rudeness. And there's some reasons why you would think that that would happen. The anonymity, as you mentioned, the fact that you can't easily see the reactions of the people who you're hurting, and it's so easy to misunderstand the norms, sort of the expectations for how polite to be. Because in everyday life, we, of course, allow a pretty broad range of what might look like rudeness in other circumstances, between the how polite you are, say, in a business meeting, and then the way you might tease one another when you go out for a beer afterwards. So there are reasons to think that, in fact, there is more rudeness and to understand why, but it's very hard to evaluate whether there's actually whether this is a problem or whether we're simply seeing more of what was always there in various walks of life.
Very interesting. What do you think, Mark Timney?
I'm with David there, and if history's shown us anything in regards to something like this, it's that every time we've had a new mass medium, people have always said, oh, my God, all these problems are getting worse because of this mass media.
The Gutenberg printing press.
Exactly.
Bring down society.
It absolutely. And it's been with every new one, radio, magazines, newspapers, right on down the line. And the internet, and like as David said, it just makes it so much easier to see it because now everybody has a voice. Everyone has a front door to every aspect of every medium again, and it's all there
so
in one place.
So it's
your home.
Much more
Yeah.
Not much more relative
right.
to what was
our
out there.
Our exposure's worse.
Well, gee, David, you know, just to look at the headlines from this spring, though, just bear with me here. New York Times, a call for manners in the world of nasty blogs. USA Today, rudeness, threats make the web a cruel world. CIO.com, that's Chief Information Officer.com. Web rage, why it happens, what it costs you, how to stop. I mean, just judging from that, David, you know, you can't blame us for wondering, what's going on?
Well, one of the things that's going on is that the mainstream media, which have been by necessity, they've been a tightly controlled space in which very few people get to talk, and the talk is highly commercialized generally, not in the present case, of course, and so you don't want to offend or shock. So we've had public media that is extremely tightly controlled, and it sounds like nobody's conversation, and suddenly being exposed to the way that people talk. And so, yeah, the mainstream media is scandalized. People use bad language, and they are stupid sometimes and say awful things. Well, you know, if you were to peel back the roofs of all the bars in the world, or even just all sort of the dining rooms, and we're able to peer down from the top and listen in on all the conversations that all Americans are having at any time, you too you'd be scandalized by that too.
So it's the mainstream media being a little bit snobbish towards this more open media society?
They are scandalized that these things are happening. Scandalized.
And at the same time, the mainstream media perhaps has brought about this degree of incivility by trying to seek greater ratings and to get more of an audience. They've had shows and people on there who do nothing but be uncivil and to be rude. So I don't think they should be wagging a finger at anyone.
Our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And today in the exchange, we're looking at how we communicate online for better and for worse. As I said, there's been a lot of attention to this lately, with some online communities saying their experience has been totally ruined by nasty comments, even threats. We're looking at that. There's another side to internet communications, too, which we'll talk about. For some people, online discussions have opened up whole new worlds in a positive way. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Have you ever said something online that you perhaps would not have said face-to-face? Or have you ever gotten an email or a response to a blog that has felt rude or abusive to you? Again, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Mark Timney and David Weinberger. And Mark and David, let's go to our callers. This is Peter calling from Marlow. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Somebody's already raised this point, but I'd like to extend it a little. The mainstream media sometimes makes a point of inviting people on for the purpose of basically throwing insults at them. And this has been going on a while. I mean, it isn't just Rush Limbaugh or Fox News. Can anybody remember back to something called the Joe Pine Show?
Oh, yeah.
Then there's always, of course, the Jerry Springer Show, where people are invited to be abused by the audience. Music seems to have become debased. I'm personally of the opinion that this is more of an in-your-face society, and that the internet is a reflection of that rather than the other way around.
This is a very interesting point, Peter. Thanks for calling, David. What do you think?
Oh, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, the culture of abuse, as Mark points out, is people like it apparently because the ratings go up for shows where people yell at each other. Nevertheless, even though I think Mark and I both want to make the point, we sort of want to get away from the notion that the internet is obviously and necessarily ruder than the rest of our life experience has been. Nevertheless, I think that the internet does enable rudeness at times that is not possible in the real world, and that's something that sometimes is simply an annoyance, and so you go somewhere else because you don't like the tone of voice at this particular site. And in other circumstances, results in a type of bullying that can be a real problem. So I don't want to say that this is not an issue. I just want to say that there is, within perspective, it's maybe not, it's certainly false to characterize the internet overall as a rude and threatening place.
Well, and you mentioned cyberbullying, David and Mark. Certainly what has drawn some of the media, mainstream media attention to this, was an instance where a well-known blogger received some death threats. And, you know, she was just doing her blog like any other blogger, and she had to shut the site down. She was afraid to go out. You know, this might not have happened 20 years ago. Well, it wouldn't have happened 20 years ago because she didn't have blogs.
Well, those things have always been happening, though. I mean, this has happened from, I'm sure the first cavemen had the same sort of things going on here, in that we talk behind other people's backs. We think we can get away with things that nobody will know we're doing it. We do it. Many, many studies in psychology and sociology have long shown that when we're anonymous, when we think there's no chance of reprisal, we will do things we would never, ever do. And the internet just allows that to happen. But, I mean, riots happen because people are in a crowd. They're anonymous. The classic studies of, that the psychologist had, the where they put people in separate rooms with a little buzzer that you can shock someone. When other people can't shock you, we're like two or three times more likely to shock others. So, you know, this is human nature. You know, the problem, you know, kind of quote Shakespeare here, is lies not in our stars but in ourselves. Don't blame the internet. It's in ourselves here.
Where do the trouble spots, David, come up the most? I mean, I hear more about blogs, a little bit about nasty emails, but where online does the trouble seem to occur most frequently?
Well, it's a very hard question to answer. Sites develop an ethos, norms, a sense of how it is you are expected to behave. And this is we do this all the time in our social groupings, and we know that we can talk louder, say, if we're having a beer in a bar than we do in a boardroom or whatever. And so we're very sensitive to these types of things. On the web, we're thrown into a new world where we're not, where the cues may not be as obvious, and where it's easier for anybody to come in if they're a totally open site. So it's very hard to predict where there may be outbursts of unwanted nastiness. And when there are, sites take, there are reasonable sites, a variety of them, that sites take in order to try to get the ethos back to where the site wants it to be.
And we're going to talk about that in a couple minutes, about this idea of a voluntary coding system for some sites. Also, we'll speak with Charlie Perkins, Vice President for New Media at the Union Leader Corporation, about how newspapers have dealt with their comment sites. We'll take your calls to 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Support for New Hampshire Public Radio comes from UR members and from Franklin Pierce University, offering advanced degrees through the doctoral level at 6 locations and online. Information at franklinpierce.edu. And Cole Gardens on Loudoun Road in Concord, offering ideas and materials for creating flowering window boxes and container gardens. Cole Gardens, helping you decorate with living color. More on how the internet has changed the way we communicate on The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. Then at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, prospects for a unified Democratic Party after the DNC Rules Committee debates the fate of convention delegates in Michigan and Florida. New Hampshire weather this afternoon, partly to mostly sunny, highs upper 60s, North Country upper 70s, south. Tonight, mostly clear for most of this day, mostly cloudy, chance of showers from the mountains north. Lows tonight, mid 40s north, mid 50s south. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about how the internet reduces our inhibitions when it comes to communicating with others and what that can lead to, both good and bad effects. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. What have you noticed about online communications? Have you noticed an increase in rudeness in emails, chat rooms, or blogs? Or do you think that this issue is being exaggerated off just a few people who cause trouble? 1-800-892-6477 is the number. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send us an email to the address exchange@nhpr.org. David Weinberger, Mark Timney, let's go right back to our callers and to North Berwick, Maine, where Heidi's been waiting. Hi, Heidi, go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to make a comment. My husband and I in the evenings play a massive multiplayer role-playing game rather than watching TV to entertain ourselves, and we pay a monthly fee to play this game. And there's several times where I've almost just wanted to close out my account due to the violent, hateful language that some of the other players used directed toward other players. They'll, you know, someone will be, you know, kind of saying that they're having a hard time doing something in the game, and someone will spout out, oh, go slit your wrist, go cry to your mom, or they'll make these horrendously hateful, hurtful comments, and they have no idea who's out there that they're actually saying these awful things to. And I can't imagine that these things, that these people would be saying these things in public. So I, you know, the mask of the, you know, the anonymity of the net, I think, can be a really dangerous thing, if not taken, you know, properly by mature adults. There are some kids out there who make these comments, but there are also adults out there who make these comments.
So, and, Heidi, you know, you and your husband enjoy playing online games, and yet these people have kind of ruined it for you.
Yeah, in a way, you know, we pay, you know, $30 a month. Both of us pay $30 a month because we each have an account. It's kind of a fantasy role-playing game, and you know, just the rudeness and the hateful language. They'll use these awful, awful terms for homosexuals. Or they'll say awful things about women. The degrading language about women on the game is really awful.
Well, Heidi, how long have you been doing this?
Well, we've been playing for 3 or 4 years now.
And when did it start to get bad?
It's over the last year I've actually noticed it increase. Actually, Hillary Clinton comes up a lot in these. That's, you know, they're saying, oh, we don't want a woman running this country and all this and that. And I'm like, how does this fit into, you know, kind of an escapism, a fun thing to do, you know, and but they drag up these awful, hateful things. They just throw out these terribly venomous comments. That just,
well, Heidi, are you going to quit?
I doubt it. Now, what I do is if I see someone who I don't like and what they're saying, I put them, you can actually ignore them. You can put them on an ignore so you don't see their comments coming onto your screen.
Mm-hmm. But it's still upsetting.
Yeah, yeah. When I see it, you know, sometimes they'll find one specific person and 3 or 4 people will jump on them and just attack them. And then you'll see that they've gone offline.
Well, Heidi, now, hang on a second. Mark Timney, this is a very revealing story. What do you think?
I'm willing to bet that there's an age factor here. A lot of the role-playing games have started to skew towards younger and younger audiences as they've come around. And generally speaking, kids behave worse than adults do. So that could be some of what we're seeing here, too. My mother's had the same experience. She loves card games, and she plays online. And she finds the more sophisticated a card game, which in general means a slightly older audience member, the less that kind of thing happens. But when she goes to play a basic game like Hearts or something, the behavior is atrocious.
Now, is it too easy to say, Mark, well, just don't do it? If you don't like it, shut the computer off.
Well, that's one way that we provide feedback to others. you know, and people stop doing behaviors that they don't get rewarded for. And in this case, that's a way of not rewarding someone, perhaps punishing them.
You know, David Weinberg, I have a comment here from someone else who agrees with Heidi. You know, I have seen whole forums, communities, and even sites disappear because the venomous or obscene attacks demoralized everyone. Sounds like that's what Heidi's talking about.
Yeah, and I actually play online also, and I see the same thing. And part of my reaction is sort of being depressed at this sort of there's a lot of gay bashing. So use of calling people gay in unacceptable terms if you don't like what they're doing. And part of my depression about this is say, geez, I thought we'd gotten past that, but apparently for some large segment of the population, we haven't. But Heidi actually points to a capability that's been built into the system, which is only a little bit effective, but nevertheless, the point is that which is you can designate a player to be ignored. Systems have and can build capabilities that help us manage this. So let me, if you don't mind, tell you about one of the, I think, most revealing examples of this that I've seen.
Sure, go ahead.
It's on the Howard Dean campaign. Remember Howard Dean in 2004 when he had his blog up?
He was the Internet Wonder Boy, right?
Yes. And so he was one of the first national candidates to have a web blog, and people loved it. His supporters loved it. And for each post, there'd be 300, 400 comments in an hour, 2 hours. It's a huge response. And occasionally, somebody would, almost all positive, of course, and pro-Dean, but occasionally somebody would post just some really sort of, not just negative, but stupid negative thing, which is called trolling. People do it in order to get a response. I mean, they like getting responded to. So when you denounce a troll, and the troll is really happy because he or she has derailed the conversation. So instead, what happened once was a troll posted something ridiculous and stupid, and one of the Dean supporters responded immediately saying, great, I'm setting up a troll fund. Every time this person posts, I'm going to kick in another $10 to Howard Dean. And then another 200 people or whatever on a list said, me too. Post again, troll. You want to raise another $2,000 for Dean? And it shut the trolls up. So here was actually community action that kept the Dean list pretty much troll-free.
Mm. Still, I hear what Heidi's saying, and you mentioned this too, David. You know, you hear really just cruel comments, and it kind of depresses you about the state of humanity.
Yes.
I guess that's the risk. All right.
Yeah.
Let's go back to our callers. Again, 1-800-892-6477 is the number. To Hanover, Barbara's on the air. Welcome, Barbara. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm the mom of two teenage boys. They both are deaf, and they both are the only kids in their respective grades with hearing loss. My younger son actually is the only deaf, hard of hearing child in his school. Back in 1999, I helped form a listserv that's for parents of deaf, hard of hearing kids through Yahoo groups. And I guess my comment is had my kids been growing up earlier, I would not have had the advantage of 1,000 parents in a similar situation as mine, particularly living in Hanover. If I have a question about how to handle something like a baseball helmet with my son's cochlear implants, someone will have the answer. And it's made me feel so much less isolated with my kids, particularly given a low incidence disability. And we do have rules on our listserv about bashing and methodology bashing. And I think for the most part, parents adhere to that. And in fact, I think the fact that the listserv is for parents only makes parents feel safe.
How do they, Barbara, police it, so to speak? I mean, could I go on and pose as a parent of a deaf child?
We actually have you sign up and let us know that you're, you know, the parent of a deaf child. So I suppose somebody could pose.
Mm-hmm.
That I know of, it's not happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have two or three moderators who police.
I see.
You know, police is too strong a word, but if it seems like something gets out of hand, one of us will write to the person and call it to their attention, because we feel as parents we're trying to help each other, and criticizing me for cochlear implants or you for your child doing sign language isn't what it's all about.
Yeah, and you're kind of putting yourself out there too. I mean, you're struggling and.
Sure.
You know.
And, you know, you have very unique questions. I mean, nobody else on my younger son's Little League team has problems if he pulls his helmet off and off come his implant processors. So someone will know.
Well, Barbara, hang on. I want to turn to you, David Weinberger. This is something I know you've talked about, and that is that with all the focus on, you know, rude blogs and so forth, we forget that the Internet has opened up new worlds for people in a very positive way.
Well, sure. And you have to ask, why did a billion people rush to this new and actually somewhat unfamiliar, even weird technology so quickly? And it's not so that we could yell at each other and call each other names. It's because we get something deep and important out of it, and as well as entertainment and more trivial things. And I think Barbara is giving us a great example of that. Another great example, by the way, is Elizabeth Edwards. Her book, Saving Graces, is pretty much, to a large degree, about exactly that. And it's a very moving book, actually.
Thanks for the call, Barbara. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Give us a call. What do you notice about online communications? And do you notice what they call an online disinhibition effect, where people say things that they might not say in person? 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Joining us now on the phone is Charlie Perkins. He's Vice President for New Media at the Union Leader Corporation, which publishes the New Hampshire Union Leader and Sunday News. Good morning, Charlie. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, the Union Leader has a very extensive comments site where people can post comments after an article or an editorial. First of all, just a little background, Charlie, please. When did the Union Leader begin the comments site and why?
We started that about a year ago, and we saw it as a logical follow on the paper's tradition of a wide open letters section. As many of your listeners may know, the union leader for decades has had perhaps the most open letters to the editor policy of any paper in the country. For us, it was a very easy step in some ways to say we need to bring that community forum onto the internet and make it part of unionleader.com. We thought it would succeed. It's been even livelier and more used than we thought it would be.
It is lively. I've read it, Charlie. And first of all, do most papers do this these days?
It's happening more and more often. Most major papers do it.
And what rules do you have, Charlie, about who can chime in and what they can say?
We've got a two-sentence policy we ask people to follow. It says, to improve the chances of seeing your comment posted, say something new, keep it short, and identify yourself. In general, comments that are in bad taste, poorly written, or in capital letters will not be approved. In other words, we try to keep it open, but we moderate it.
So you do moderate it, just like you would letters to the editor.
We have six people who spend at least part of their day on internet duties in this newsroom, and all of us share the responsibility of checking the comments as they come in. There's no one person who does it all. We all try to keep an eye on what's coming in, and yes, indeed, we all take turns in deciding what can go up, what will advance the discussion, and what really isn't going to do so.
And what have you noticed over the past year, Charlie, in terms of how this has evolved, not only in terms of the number of people who use it, but how they use it?
I found that the certain sorts of stories will provide very good forums for public discussion. Sadly, stories that involve tragedies will always, as we know in the news business, will always attract an audience. We have found that people like to form what you might call a cyber forum or a cyber group of mourners, grievers, those who want to reach out to a family or to a group of friends. They will use our news discussion boards as a spot to do that, which we find to be a very good public forum. We're happy to see that happen.
Go ahead, Charlie.
We also find that stories, sometimes unexpectedly, will hit an issue which resounds in the community. And I find it interesting that we'll often find leads for larger news stories from discussions that'll start on important issues of public policy, often involving families or communities.
Do you think, Charlie, that letters to the editor, old-fashioned letters to the editor in print, were more genteel than online?
Yes, though they could be pretty rough. We certainly, at the Union Leader, have never hesitated to run controversial letters. But those letters generally didn't include some of the name-calling we will see in proposed postings for our online service.
Very interesting. So people let it hang out a little bit more when they don't have to put it on paper and lick a stamp and lick an envelope.
They will, but we try to make sure that we keep the discussion moderated and in a certain tone. If the exchange is a high-quality coffee house, we see our discussion groups as perhaps more of a rowdy night spot at times, but there are rules in rowdy night spots, too.
Are there any rules, last question for you, Charlie, any rules that you have considered at the Union Leader and rejected?
What we are considering may still come to pass. I expect that at some point in the not-too-distant future, we'll have a registration system which will divide commenters into two groups, those who have proven that they can use the power wisely, and we'll give them access to post their thoughts immediately. Without moderation, we will keep those who are not registered in a, shall we say, a holding tank. We will review all of those.
So it'll be easier. You won't have to check 100%, maybe just check 50%.
Laura, when you register, we'll let you post right away.
Charlie, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Good to talk to you.
That's Charlie Perkins, Vice President for New Media at the Union Leader Corporation, which publishes the New Hampshire Union Leader and Sunday News. Mark Timney, this is a brave new world for mainstream media, and to the Union Leader's credit, it's a very large, lively place.
And they should be commended for what they're doing, not only for providing this important public forum, but also for requiring responsibility from the people who are going to participate. I think that's a critical thing here, and that the media is, in this case, is doing exactly what we would always hope that a media would do in a democratic society. So,
well,
thumbs up to the Union Leader.
There is a fair amount of name calling in this comment section.
Well, you know,
especially when it comes to like congressmen and so forth.
Personally, I would put up with all the rudeness in the world just for the opportunity for anyone to be able to put their thoughts out there. Because I believe in that libertarian liberal theory that, you know, it's a marketplace of ideas. Let's let everyone post so that cream will rise to the top. We'll find that truth.
Although we did mention earlier that, and this side, union leader side, is moderated, so this does not come up in this instance. But again, the bloggers who received threats of violence, even death, I mean, so forth. I mean, should they, people who send death threats to innocent bloggers, also be allowed to say whatever they want?
I think people should be allowed to express themselves and then be held accountable for their expression if it is illegal. Threatening someone is illegal.
Can you also elaborate on that, David Weinberger? I mean, certain types of speech is illegal, even if it's on a blog or a comment section.
Yes, and what's illegal in the real world generally, in terms of speech, is generally illegal online.
So you can't threaten violence or death?
No. No more. It's a little difficult sometimes to tell the difference between a real death threat that somebody should worry about and leaving room for somebody to speak very unpleasantly about in loose sorts of ways that we do in real life, where we don't actually mean any harm. That's one of the dangers that we face. I'm a little bit we have found something to disagree about, Mark. I'm less the push for accountability, which in many cases we do want. Seems to me that if taken as far as many are proposing, will chill speech in ways that we don't want, and not just in this country, but in other countries that are totalitarian in their approach, but even in this country as well. So I actually prefer letting people be as anonymous as possible and only requiring registration and accountability and the like when circumstances really call for it.
Well, give us a little bit more on that, David. I mean, an example, perhaps.
Well, we want to, so you want, to, I think, to enable people to, and our Constitution and our courts seem to believe this as well, that we want to enable people to speak without accountability, because they sometimes, you know, a lot of times they say things not worth listening to, but they sometimes say things that they couldn't have said if the words could be traced back to who they are. And that lack of accountability, I know it's odd to say, but that lack of accountability surfaces a type of thought and speech that has often its own value. We pay a price for it. Absolutely, we pay a price for it. But as a starting position, I think enabling and presuming anonymity is actually a good place to start.
Now, we're going into a break, David, but coming back, we'll pick up on that. And how would you feel if that speech was spreading scurrilous rumors about you or your wife or so forth? So sometimes some people feel it does go a little too far in free speech. We will talk about that after a break. Take a lot more of your calls, too, so stay on the line, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Summer means two things in New Hampshire: higher gas prices and NHPR's annual raffle. We're giving away three great opportunities to spend less at the pump: a Vespa LX50 scooter, a commuter bicycle by Giant, and one of the most fuel-efficient cars on the road, a brand new 2008 Toyota Prius. And if you enter by June 28th, you could win our early bird prize, $2,000 worth of gas. Call 1-888-805-NHPR or visit nhpr.org.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. Support comes from UR members and from Franklin Savings Bank, a mutual savings bank providing banking, investment, and insurance services to central New Hampshire since 1869. Information at fsbnh.com. And Massachusetts College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences in Manchester offering accredited BSN program for students with bachelor degrees. Info session tomorrow at 5. mcphs.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tuesday on The Exchange, the politics of inflation. We uncover the history and mystery of the Consumer Price Index. Email us your questions before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us Tuesday morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at how the internet reduces our inhibitions, for better or for worse, when we communicate with each other. We've heard lots of examples on both sides. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. What do you think? Do you think the internet internet has increased the ability for people to be rude, or has it increased the ability for people to communicate with each other in a positive way? 1-800-892-6477 is the number. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. Before we go back to the phones, David Weinberger, you were saying that you come down on the side of more open communication because the information that gets out is information that might not have gotten out there otherwise. But my question to you is, you know, let's say I spread really bad rumors about David Weinberger and everybody believes them and you try to retract them, but it's too late. It's already out there. Is that really fair to you?
No, it's totally unfair. And there are some recourses, but the recourses are imperfect. And it may be that I cannot track down the person who's saying these horrible things about me. That's absolutely true. I mean, there are recourses, but they may not work. And that, so we have to make a decision, because we are in a position as a culture. We are in a position where if we wanted to, we could impose requirements on how computers are built and change the way the internet works and put requirements on the carriers of the internet, the ISPs and the like. We could do all this, and there are very serious proposals to do exactly this, to make sure that every packet that moves across the internet, every little bit of data, we can track back exactly to who said it. That is a massive price to pay, though, in order to solve what is a terrible problem for some people, namely they're being attacked anonymously. I'm not willing to move in that direction.
So you're willing to pay the price, even if you get defamed?
Well, in theory, yeah. Ask me when it happens. Yeah, right. I suddenly switch, but...
And one more question for you, Mark Timney, just something on Charlie Perkins from the Union Leader said. He talked about people who sometimes send emails in or comments in all caps.
Yeah,
now, this is going a little aside from the idea of, you know, threats or rude behavior on blogs and so forth. But here's an email from Pamela. She says, at times I've been amazed at the aggressive tone of responses to my emails. So I would reread the email I sent. I could see how someone could have overreacted to what I said. Now I'm much more careful to say things softly and thoroughly. Could you comment briefly, Mark, on how sometimes we write in emails and we may come across as rude and we don't even realize it?
Well, this is a problem based that interpersonal communication people would tell you. Most of our communication is nonverbal. You and I can see each other. We can tell what we're thinking and when our words mean what we think they mean. But when you take things literally without that physical presence, it's very easy to confuse all that. And by the way, in case you didn't know, if you write an email or anything in all caps, it means you're yelling. So don't do that unless you mean to yell.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. 1-800-892-6477. And to Brattleboro, Vermont, where Laura's on the air. Hi, Laura. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. One of the nastier things you haven't discussed yet is identity theft of a sort, not your credit card numbers, et cetera, but your identity in a chat room. And it happened to me, ironically, on an NPR show site, and it was really not nice. I went away for a while. I was busy. And when I came back, boom, somebody had hacked my identity and stolen my password. And so supposedly I was this horrific person who had said awful things about everybody and everything. And, I mean, it was like, oh, my God, maybe if this person can do that, maybe they can get to my home. I mean, I was really quite frightened. And I ended up posting a goodbye message stressing, and I did use caps when I said it was not me. And I left the site permanently, and indeed the site eventually, I think things got even worse, and it has an altered format, and I think they've got moderators going on. But it was really quite shocking because I stressed trying to be polite.
Wow. Wow, Laura, this is quite a story. David Weinberger, what do you think?
That's terrible. I'm sorry that happened. If you're on a site that has registration and has passwords, then not that this is any comfort to you at all, but it was their fault. I mean, if you're going to put in that sort of system, it better work. And one of the unfortunate lessons to learn from this is, I'm sorry to say, that in general, the more security you put in, when somebody hacks it, the harder it is, the worse the effect.
Well, it makes hearing all these stories, David, makes me think, I don't think I want to go into any one of these things. I mean, would that be an overreaction on my part?
Sure. because there are steps you can take. Some of them are, you know, sort of nuclear, like leaving the site forever and posting a note in all caps, and that even that doesn't solve the problem. It just sort of ends the problem, you know, without undoing the harm that was done. But you have to balance that against, say, Barbara, who called in earlier, who gets tremendous benefit that she couldn't otherwise have gotten through a mailing list that she started for parents of deaf children. So we get lots and lots out of it. There are, you get mugged in the real world too, but you still, you know, you don't stay holed up in your apartment.
Laura, thanks for the call. And on that analogy, David, we got a couple emails that I want to share with you and Mark Timney. This is from Sarah. She says, I think people are boiled down to who they really are in email. For example, if they don't consider capitalization and punctuation important, it's out. Same goes for manners. I think email actually reveals who or what kind of the person is, because they don't have a face to read, which may or may not reel them in or influence them. So she seems to be saying, Mark Timney, it's all who we really are. We just have an opportunity to express it via email. Or other instances of communication.
That's a real tough one. I don't think I would agree with that. I would say for some of us, certainly that was true. But I know there are people out there who just maybe don't have a good grasp of the language or of grammar or mechanics. And you know, I don't know that I'd want to judge them just based upon that.
And here's another email. This is from... go ahead, David.
Just to jump in for a moment. You know, email and much of the web in general favors good writers. And by good writers, I don't mean grammatically correct writers, although that, you know, certainly may be an element of it, but people who can do the thing that good writers do, which is to anticipate how the reader is going to take what they say. And that's not an obvious skill. You can be a fine person but not be a very good writer in that sense and end up miscommunicating frequently.
Here's another email. This is from Dallas in Loudoun Village. He says, I don't see that people are any ruder on the Internet than in real life. What I see is more deception and lying, and this is because it's easier for people to be deceptive if you can't actually hear them or see them when they are lying. This gets back to something we talked about earlier, David. What do you think of this email?
Well, lying, it's hard to find any, you know, lying is bad, almost always. The deception, however, it depends. If you're trying to deceive people because you want to get something out of them, you know, money, let's say, that's one thing. But there's a type of playing with identity that is very common on the web. It's very common among the young on the web. And there are reasons to think that this is actually a beneficial and helpful thing to a large degree. That is, you can try out different personalities, just as we do in different social circumstances. We are somewhat different people in different environments. On the web, we can more actively and playfully engage in being this type of person on this list and that type of person in that chat room. And so long as you're not actively trying to deceive money, deceive people to take their money, I think it's actually probably overall a positive thing.
I want to get back to this idea that both of you raised, limits or restrictions, and some sites have moderators, and some people seem, you know, feel like that's a good thing. What do you think, Mark Timney, of the discussions now about a voluntary ratings guide system like they have for movies, you know, rated R, rated PG, and so forth? There's been some talk of creating logos for certain sites. For example, on this site, anonymous writing is allowed. On this one, it's not. On this one, you can say whatever you want. On this one, you can't use swear words. What do you think about that kind of voluntary rating system? So people who want to go to certain sites and don't want to see hideous language will feel some measure of protection.
I hadn't really thought about this before, but I don't think I'd have a problem with that. I think is anything that gives a consumer a chance to figure out in advance, this is what I'm exposing myself to, is probably not a bad idea. I might be a little bit afraid that this might, as David warned about before, chill some of the information or the free flow of information. On the other hand, hey, there's so many websites out there. I think there's plenty of places for all of us to play.
Your thoughts, David?
I have mixed feelings. If people want to do it, it's fine. It's the only thing I would point to is the subtle chilling effect of specifying rules where you don't have to. So for a few weeks on my site, my blog, which has open comments, and generally I don't have any problem with I just don't have problems with people posting nasty stuff for whatever reason. But in the wake of one of the bullying episodes elsewhere, I posted some common sense rules, and some of my readers wrote to me and said, you know, we feel somewhat insulted. Why are you telling us to be nice and to talk about? We know that. Why are you specifying rules where we don't need them? And they actually were a little offended by it, and it was unnecessary, so I took them down. If people were cursing or hate speech or whatever, yeah, then I'd put up a note, or if there were a little image, a little logo thing, I might use that.
All right, let's go back to our callers, gentlemen, and to Hinsdale, where Mark has been waiting. Hi, Mark, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
I just have a couple of, you know, kind of bulleted items I'd like to throw out there for discussion.
Sure.
One is this phenomenon of internet relationships. I've been talking with people in chat rooms, and they're so distraught about a relationship they had with someone they never met, actually. And then I wanted to comment on one of the things I think Doug was saying about how it's okay to play around with your identity online, and I would just say that gives credence to disingenuousness, that there's already enough of that in real life, and it just gets reinforced by the internet. And the other thing that really I find very disturbing is that this whole camera idea, this web camera thing, has become an incredible outlet, whether it's appropriate or not, is up for discussion, for exhibitionists. I'm flabbergasted by it. I don't understand the whole idea of that, but
what's been your experience, Mark?
Up for discussion.
Yeah, what's been your experience with what you call exhibitionists? I mean, you go to a site that you know and like and open it, and all of a sudden you see stuff you really would rather not see? Or?
No. You can if you open somebody's cam that's open and you see something you don't like, you just close it.
Right.
You know, mainly it's a certain amount of these people are showing themselves for their gratification.
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually illegal, isn't it?
You know,
that's what I'm just kind of throwing out there. It seems kind of odd that this has become an outlet for that.
Well, let's take that third point. Mark Timney, what do you think? It's certainly the internet has allowed many new platforms for people to express themselves in ways that many of us may find inappropriate.
Every mass medium has done that, and the internet just gives us, for the first time, everyone can be their own radio station, their own TV station. So I'm not surprised that we're not seeing the full we are seeing the full gamut of human behavior. It's going to happen because now we're in control for the first time of a mass medium.
Kind of what David said right off the bat.
Yeah.
The rules have been taken off, and anybody can communicate in ways that we may or may not like.
Right.
What do you think, David?
Yeah, I mean, the webcam thing where somebody sets up a camera in her or his house so you can watch them 24, yeah, I guess, you know, there's some element of exhibitionism in that, although it's actually a little different than sort of the classic raincoat sort of exhibitionism, if you know what I mean. Probably something else is going on there, there are people who have head-mounted webcams. They're on 24. You see the world from their point of view, so you don't see them. You don't see them. The camera's on their head. You see their world, and that's a type of exhibitionism, also, I guess, or voyeurism. But it, giving it those terms misses what's actually going on there. They're in some cases they're trying to be completely transparent for. I don't know, you know, theoretical reasons as well as whatever personal gratification they get from. It's the notion that an entire life is visible from that person's point of view is actually, I find, really fascinating. It's a fascinating idea.
Mark, thanks a lot for calling in. And gentlemen, just to wrap up with you, and I'll turn to you first, David, where do you think this discussion is going to go? You know, the coarsening of cyberspace and the subsequent coarsening of our society. That's the theme that you're seeing repeated these days. Do you think that theme is going to continue?
Yeah, I think, yes.
Fair or unfair?
Oh, both. It's both fair and unfair. We're in a culture clash, and this is one element of it. And we're either going to decide that the internet is too much for us to bear. It is too much of everything. And we can't bear that anymore. So that's one path. We basically turn it into cable TV. We, you know, put in the controls, no anonymity, nothing nobody wants to see. And we end up with a nice safe repetition of what we, or extension of what we currently have now, which would be, I'll obviously I think that's the worst alternative. And the other is that we get used to how to live and navigate in an open world where there are many things that we hate hearing and seeing. But the overall benefit of living together, connected in an open world, we decide is worth the pain.
Mark Timney, your final thoughts?
I think it's going to go the latter way that David just said, in part because no one can control the Internet as easily as we've been able to control other mediums. I mean, the United States can pass all the laws it wants, put all the controls, but hey, the websites are coming in from every part of the globe. Maybe just one last thing, this isn't all doom and gloom. We tend to think that it's not just the Internet where people are getting ruder, that it seems like everyday life. But one of the more recent studies on this by Public Agenda, a corporation or a company, a nonprofit that does research, and you can get this report online, publicagenda.org, asked people about rudeness in everyday life. And, for the most part, things aren't so bad. Two-thirds of people said that they practically never run across rude people in their neighborhood. And about their worst complaint for rudeness was about driving. It's not that they didn't come across rudeness in general, but it's not as bad as we generally like to think about.
All right, gentlemen, both of you, thank you very much. David Weinberger, thanks for your time.
Oh, thank you.
David Weinberger, fellow at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. His new book is out in paperback. It's called Everything is Miscellaneous. Mark Timney, it's nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me here, Laura.
Mark Timney, assistant professor of journalism at Keene State College with an emphasis on mass communications and popular culture. I want to remind you that the Socrates Cafe is open for business. And the question we're asking this month is, how do you define good art? Our live show is Monday, June 9th, but the cafe is now open for your comments. Post your thoughts on the Socrates Cafe page at nhpr.org. Get Socratic on us. What do you think? What is good art? It's all at nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The producer is Dan Ankelis. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our intern is Leanna French. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
Expressed on this program.